Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. President Donald Trump says Congress should get rid of the CHIPS and Science Act. If Republicans in the House do repeal it, key technology investments across New York could be in jeopardy. Jung Yoon Han from the New York Public News Network reports.
Trump's comments during his address to a joint session of Congress Tuesday night were his strongest critique yet of President Biden's landmark legislation.
Your CHIPS Act is a horrible, horrible thing. We give hundreds of billions of dollars, and it doesn't mean a thing. They take our money and they don't spend it.
The CHIPS Act incentivizes technological research and semiconductor manufacturing in the U.S. as a way to reduce America's reliance on other countries like China. In a statement on X, formerly known as Twitter, Governor Kathy Hochul said repealing CHIPS would risk 50,000 jobs and $100 billion worth of investments in central New York. According to Hochul's office, New York has the largest financial commitments from the CHIPS Act of all states. That's mostly through Micron, which is a semiconductor manufacturing company that's expanding its operations outside of Syracuse. The CHIPS Act was made through a bipartisan partnership between Republican Senator Todd Young from Indiana and New York Senator Chuck Schumer. Schumer spoke about Trump's comments on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
He said he wants to cut it. I don't even know why he wants to cut it.
Other projects in New York could be in jeopardy if CHIPS is repealed. That includes GlobalFoundries' plan for a $2 billion factory in Saratoga County and an I-90 hub spanning Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo. In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han for the New York Public News Network.
New York State lawmakers are setting their priorities ahead of the April 1st budget deadline. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine has more.
Governor Kathy Hochul proposed a $252 billion budget in January. In the coming days, one House versions of the budget will be released. Republican Assemblyman Matt Simpson of the 114th District says he'll be pushing for an increase in the Environmental Protection Fund.
I think it's important to work on these resiliency projects that we need in the face of, you know, the weather that we're getting. Our infrastructure is inadequately supported right now, and we're going to see bigger losses down the road if we don't spend the money now. It's going to be more costly down the road when we do have the funds to address these issues. And, you know, there's no more important investment than in infrastructure, clean water and wastewater, and that's, you know, part of the EPF.
Hochul's proposed budget centers her so-called affordability agenda. The Democrat proposed increasing the state child tax credit to nearly $1,000 per child under the age of four and tax rebate checks. 112th District Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh, a Republican, says she's concerned with ballooning spending.
And I think that's really risky when you look at the whole picture, you know, federal plus state, and how that's all going to work out. So I'm calling for austerity. The governor may want to make points to say, I recognize the affordability crisis and I want to give you money back. But, you know, a one-off like that might not be a smart move. So I hope that they're going to factor that discussion in as they come up with the final budget.
Republican State Senator Dan Steck represents the 45th District. He's concerned with the size and priorities of the proposal, which will ultimately be hashed out by the governor and Democrats who control the legislature.
We're spending five times as much money on the MTA as we are on our local roads, and 87% of our state highways are local and county controlled roads. The public sees that, business owners see that, the people that are paying the taxes are seeing that, and then we wonder why we have an out-migration problem. So, you know, until we get back to the basics, you know, what are the basics? Hey, you know what? We need to have good physical infrastructure. Of course, we need to make sure we have a good education system, and we need to have good health care.
Steck is one Republican seeking the nomination to run in the special election for Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik's 21st district seat. Democrats already nominated farmer Blake Gendebien to run in the special election when Stefanik becomes UN ambassador. Assemblywoman Carrie Warner supports the governor's rebate checks, but the Democrat from the 113th District adds she'd like the state to be more analytical in its approach to affordability.
I'm looking for things like paying down the remaining unemployment insurance debt that is comes out of the pandemic. No more surcharges for our small businesses. This is one of those sort of systemic things that if we pay off that debt, which I think is like $6.8 billion remaining at this point, that frees up businesses to lower their prices or to pay their employees better or to hire that next person. And that's how we generate economic activity.
A spokesperson for the governor says she is committed to putting forward, quote, a balanced budget that will bring costs down while continuing to make smart investments in the services and programs New Yorkers depend on, end quote. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Aaron Shello Levine.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with David Lombardo. He's host of the Capitol Press Room on WCNY, and we spoke about the coming budget deadline and what some of the top issues are for lawmakers.
So I think the major issues are really outside of the fiscal realm this year. Because the state has a lot of money, although there's an element of ambiguity surrounding federal support, which we can get to. But on the policy side, one of the big things the governor is pushing this year and has been talking about for months now is expanding the use of involuntary commitments. And the legislature, particularly some of the progressives in the Democratic majorities in the Assembly and Senate, have balked at this idea. And I think what we'll see in the final weeks of budget negotiations, which, as you said, is due at the end of March, but likely won't be wrapped up until sometime in April, if not later, there will be some sort of focus on what that language actually looks like as they try to address public safety concerns, mental health needs, as well as the civil rights of the New Yorkers who might be affected by this. Then I mentioned the ambiguity over the fiscal side of things. Right now, Governor Hochul, as she's proposed her budget, has really tried not to respond to the chance that the federal government might dramatically shake up the support it gives to New York. And this is a lot of support. I believe about $93 billion is anticipated in the coming fiscal year. And if any of that is jeopardized, then New York needs to either consider backfilling that money, which we can do to a certain extent, or potentially cutting programs that we might have otherwise expected to fund with federal dollars.
Yeah, one of the big ones is Medicaid, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And Medicaid is one of the largest areas of the state budget. It's funded basically by a share of federal dollars and state support, as well as some local support. And even a 1% or 2% change in what the federal government gives us, that's billions of dollars and would require some serious tinkering in our state budget. At this point in the process, it doesn't seem like the Assembly, the Senate, or the governor is inclined to pass a budget that backfills any of this money. And so it's possible we could see the legislature having to return sometime during the fiscal year, which runs from April 1 of 2025 to March 31st of 2026, to adjust the state budget spending plan to respond to potential cuts at the federal level to something like Medicaid.
Yeah, there are other big financial issues. We're hearing about the Chips and Science Act, which the president of the United States went after, and the issue of congestion pricing in New York City.
Yeah, congestion pricing and funding for the MTA overall remain a big sticking point here in New York. Obviously, the president has voiced his opposition to the congestion pricing system that's been put in place since January Fifth, the governor, as well as proponents of the toll in the Manhattan Business District, have indicated and are actually in court to defend this system, a system that, in addition to addressing congestion, is supposed to be raising money that the MTA can borrow against to fund some of its capital projects. In addition to this money, though, there's a question of other capital project needs for the MTA, and the transit officials in New York City are hoping that they can get billions of additional dollars in capital funding as part of this year's budget. Whether state lawmakers will be able to find the money in the couch cushions to fund something like that remains to be seen, given how we had a recent revenue forecasting meeting where the budget officials from the governor's office and the Assembly and Senate get together and they rejiggered how much money they think we have to spend. I think the number was about $500 million. That's not going to cut it for the MTA. So one of the things that we might see debated in the final days of this budget process is whether there's going to be some sort of increased taxes, probably targeted in the MTA region, to fund some of the additional capital needs of that system.
Or as the speaker, Carl Hasey, said, revenue raises, right? They like to say it that way, not taxes.
Yeah, revenue raisers are the parlance here in Albany, I think in part because they want to make it seem like it's revenue for the sake of spending. And, you know, anytime you can obfuscate the word taxes or fees is always a good one in the minds of the politicians who are advancing those so-called revenue raisers.
That's David Lombardo, host of the Capital Press Room on WCNY. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Governor Kathy Hochul is focusing her agenda this legislative session on affordability, and she says programs for young people and child care are a key component. But a new report finds acute challenges in many communities. The Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons explains.
Federal funding for higher education and research is in question amid President Trump's efforts to freeze federal grants and loans. Confusion remains at agencies like the National Institutes of Health, which supports academic research across the country. SUNY's Research Foundation estimates it will lose $79 million in current grants, which includes more than $21 million through June. A coalition of 22 state attorneys general is suing the administration after the NIH said it would slash funding for indirect cost reimbursements, covering things like lab costs, faculty, infrastructure, and utilities. At the same time, students gathered at the state capitol in Albany Wednesday to call for more state funding for New York's public colleges and universities. Giovanni Harvey is a grad student at the University at Albany, student assembly president, and student trustee on the SUNY Board of Trustees.
Worried about not only the time and the investment that we're putting in, but to be able to continue that. I mean, we have some students in some of our university centers at University at Albany, all the way down to Stony Brook, doing some really cutting edge research. And so, you know, we hope to preserve that. We also hope that the state will come into support should any cuts happen in that area.
In February, the U.S. Department of Education issued what some are now calling the Dear Colleague Letter, a four-page memo stating educational institutions and state agencies across the country, including pre-K to higher ed, must scrub diversity and inclusionary initiatives across the board. And plans to dismantle the department resurfaced again recently when Trump's Education Secretary nominee Linda McMahon told senators she supports efforts to return education to the states and abolish federal bureaucracy. Sean Miller is the Northeast Regional Director for Young Invincibles, a youth advocacy group. He says if SUNY and CUNY institutions are affected, the state needs to fortify itself and protect education.
The Trump administration and Project 2025 explicitly call for the dismantling of the Department of Education. And this would be horrible for people across America, for people across New York, because it means defunding education at every level, right? It means privatizing education, which is not at all what we want. We know that public education is a public good. We know that it is something that helps people of all backgrounds, of all income levels, but especially our working class and low-income students, to be able to get a good education, get to college, and get a job that has a living wage, right?
Other students say they fear wellness supports will be cut. Berea Masnu is a political science and biology undergraduate at City College of New York.
We're all human. We should all be supporting each other, being there for each other. There is no room for hate, for judgment. We should be funding them. We should be helping them.
Miller adds, ensuring students have access to the support systems they need is an investment in the economy.
So it's really a priority to make sure that they're accessing mental health counselors on campus, ideally someone who can build a relationship with them and help to address issues that they've been dealing with for years or sometimes decades.
In a statement to WAMC, Hochul's office said the governor is committed to making sure SUNY and CUNY have the funds they need. Hochul's proposed 2026 budget includes $207 million in new state support for the state's public higher education campuses. Her office adds that federal support is, quote, absolutely crucial, and the state is working with the New York State Attorney General to protect the institutions from unauthorized attempts to cut or freeze federal funding, unquote. Earlier in February, Hochul said New York receives $5.5 billion in federal education funding annually.
$3.2 billion goes directly into our budget. $2.3 billion goes to localities. If that money is jeopardized, what I can tell you will happen, localities lose that money, they will have to raise taxes. For outside the city, your largest part of your local property tax bill is your school taxes. If that money evaporates from the federal government, where are they going to go? This is going to hit homeowners and businesses. And I want them to be aware of this consequence.
The budget is due by April 1st.
Education is a red, white, white, white. Education is a red, white, white, white.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul nominated Amanda Lefton to lead the State Department of Environmental Conservation. It comes at a time when advocates expect the federal government to radically change its approach to the environment. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
Lefton, who lives in the Capital Region, previously worked for the Biden administration as director of the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management at the Department of Interior. She helped develop the federal government's offshore wind program and went on to become a vice president for the offshore wind company RWE. She's also worked for nonprofits like the Nature Conservancy. Ned Sullivan, president of Scenic Hudson, says he's worked with Lefton before, back when she was New York's first assistant secretary for energy and environment. He says he's thrilled by her nomination.
Her commitment to the environment, to advancing clean water, clean air, while also creating good-paying jobs that balance the environment and economic health of New York State and the Hudson Valley, is just going to be a really good thing for the entire state.
Lefton comes in at a time when the Trump administration is slashing funding at federal agencies and reconsidering its official stance on greenhouse gases. The White House said Thursday the EPA plans to cut 65% of its spending. New Administrator Lee Zeldin has reportedly urged President Trump to reconsider a 2009 EPA finding that determined greenhouse gases to be a threat to public health. Dan Shapley is the Senior Director of Riverkeepers Advocacy Policy and Planning Program.
The state's going to have to shore up a lot and defend what it can. So whether that means Superfund cleanups or, Riverkeeper works very closely with the Division of Water at DEC. That division gets, roughly 40% of its budget from the EPA. So where is that? How are we going to fill in those gaps while still making progress?
Shapley says he feels Lefton is up to the task. He's looking forward to working with her on a number of issues, including harmful algal blooms and continued rainfall and sewage overflow from New York City into the Hudson River.
We really need to get aggressive and ahead on really protecting our water supplies. And that's everything from New York City's water supply, which serves half the population of the state of New York, and really all of our communities that rely on public water that are going to be stressed in new ways as the climate changes.
Sullivan, meanwhile, pointed to conserving land, cleaning contaminated sites, and expanding public access to state land and resources, like the Hudson River, as a priority.
She really gets that environment and the economy go together. And it's not environment versus the economy. It's how do we protect New York's natural resources for public enjoyment? How do we create jobs around that? Because investments in the state's parks and natural resources invariably creates good-paying jobs, and she's very sensitive to that.
Parks and Trails New York says it is also excited by Lefton's nomination. In a statement, Executive Director Paul Steely White points to Lefton's, quote, strong track record for standing up for the environment, adding, quote, we look forward to working with her to achieve DEC's mission to conserve, improve, and protect New York's natural resources, end quote. Lefton still needs to be confirmed by the state Senate. If confirmed, she'll take over for Acting Commissioner Sean Mahar, who has been in the role since former Commissioner Basil Sagos stepped down in March 2024. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State authorities are working to increase public safety on college campuses. The Legislative Gazette's Alexander Babby explains.
State officials say the vast majority of sexual and gender-based violence goes unreported at New York's higher education institutions. A discussion at State Police Headquarters in Albany Wednesday focused on the role of campus safety organizations in preventing rapes, assaults, stalking, and other crime, and supporting victims. Kelly Nicholas Owens is Executive Director of the New York State Office for the Prevention of Domestic Violence.
All of the systems that interact with a survivor or victim of domestic violence have three pillars in what and how they approach it. That it's survivor-centered, meaning the survivor's in the driver's seat on how we respond. That it's trauma-informed, and that it's culturally responsive, and that we look at, we can't just take that one incident because there's historical trauma.
In addition to being the only state with a cabinet-level position for domestic violence prevention, New York also recognizes April as Sexual Assault Prevention Month. State Police Superintendent James Bruin says sexual violence is a serious challenge facing colleges and universities across the state. He says most cases are not reported to police.
I took the liberty to review some statistics which indicate 1 in 5 women and 1 in 16 men were sexually assaulted while going to college. It's estimated that 80% of sexual assaults on college campuses go unreported.
Megan Malone is a gender violence prevention specialist with the State Office for the Prevention of Domestic Violence. She says language is key and says many survivors don't feel that they're victims. She says responders need to be able to understand the victim's perspective.
On the other side of that is abusive partner individual. There may be victims that are kind of off put by hearing the words abuser, perpetrator, possibly their ex-partners, current partners. Being called those things can be scary, off-putting. So just listening to how they are referring to that person.
Former NFL and Syracuse University quarterback Don McPherson is working with the state on a project called Aspire New York. McPherson wants to change how sexual assault and violence is talked about on campus. While a vast majority of gender-based violence is perpetrated by men, McPherson says heaping blame with labels like toxic masculinity does nothing to help.
It is the silence of men that has allowed that term to characterize a generation of boys who've only heard their identity discussed in terms of being toxic. And I always remind people, before we use toxic to talk about masculinity or relationships, we most often use toxic to talk about waste.
Instead, McPherson teaches what he calls aspirational masculinity.
We need to reach them with a message that talks about not just prevention of violent crime or sexual crimes, but the promotion of what it means to be a healthy and whole person in a civil and just and peaceful society.
Campus police officers agree. Caitlin Clark is an investigator with the State University of New York at Mooresville in central Madison County.
You'd be shocked as how we actually do have a lot of similar incidents compared to larger campuses. It's just, I think we have to be more creative, being a smaller college, with our resources and getting our students what they may need.
Clark says her department needs more of three things: state support, officers, and training.
I want to train more than just the bare minimum. We train to minimums, like our standards are minimum standards, and I would love to see the support to get us more than more training and continuous training.
The Office for the Prevention of Domestic Violence recommends anyone experiencing sexual or gender-based violence to seek medical attention, even if they feel they're not injured. The state's domestic and sexual violence hotline is 1-800-942-6906. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Alexander Babby.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2510. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.